Tonight, the hunt for a killer, a Florida community on edge as the search intensifies for the man police believe murdered three people over 10 days. The question tonight, did he act alone? New allegations, more than three dozen women reportedly accuse a Hollywood director of sexual harassment. Some of them talking with us as four U.S. senators share their own stories. Inside North Korea, we travel deep inside the country and hear from ordinary North Koreans about the possibility of war. Cops and cameras as more police departments adopt body cams. What a new study found about their effectiveness in reducing tension and violence. And artistic touch will take you to a hospital where nurses are also painters to the delight of young patients.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. The mystery is deepening around a series of three murders in one Florida neighborhood over the span of 10 days. Tonight, Tampa police say they still believe the crimes are linked. But in a new twist, they now say it may not all be the work of just one person. With few leads, the police chief telling us today the deadly crime wave is a heavy burden for residents and for his department. We begin tonight with Maya Rodriguez in Tampa.
In the Seminole Heights neighborhood of Tampa today, police are searching for a possible serial killer.
They're obviously able to vanish very quickly.
Vanishing without a trace, leaving the community on edge.
There's no rhyme or reason, so we all feel a little shaken and concerned that, you know, we could be the next victim.
In the past 2 weeks, three people have been killed within blocks of each other, each while walking alone. October 9th, Benjamin Mitchell gunned down while walking to a bus stop. 2 days later, Monica Hoffa shot and killed in a vacant lot. And 10 days after the first murder, Anthony Naboa shot and killed after getting off at the wrong bus stop. Police say although the victims did not know each other, they have linked the murders through their similarities and undisclosed evidence.
You have my word these cases are connected.
Is this the work of a serial killer?
We're not willing to use that term yet because we don't know enough. I have purposely avoided labeling that because I don't want people to focus in on one person. We don't know if it's more than one person, a team of people.
For Benjamin Mitchell's family, his death is hitting them hard.
It's so far-fetched that you can't even wrap your head around it. Like, you don't think something like this would be so home, close to home.
Police released this surveillance camera footage identifying this individual as a person of interest. But so far, no suspect. And no motive.
We have very little information. We don't know who is doing this.
Romano Whitley heard the gunshots during the second murder. The body of Monica Hoffa found lying in an empty lot across the street.
This is like too close to home, right across the street from, you know, your house. I'm up all night looking out the windows, trying to see what's going on. So it's very scary.
Police will hold a community meeting tomorrow to address neighbors' concerns. A vigil for the victims is set for later this evening. Kate.
Maya Rodriguez, thank you. There are disturbing new allegations of sexual harassment being reported tonight, dozens of them, this time against a Hollywood director. His accusers finding each other through social media. And today, even some U.S. senators joined what's becoming a growing chorus, standing up against sexual harassment. NBC's Steve Patterson has more.
Tonight, dozens of sexual harassment claims are surfacing against writer and director James Toback, best known for films like The Pickup Artist and Bugsy. The LA Times reporting more than 30 women have come forward, portraying a man who for decades used his position to harass women, those who aspired to be in his films, or simply those he met on the street. NBC News spoke to three women who say Toback sexually harassed them in New York years ago.
He came over to me when I was sitting in a chair. And he started rubbing his groin against me.
I basically called him out. I'm like, what do you think, that I'm stupid? I was born yesterday. Like, this is so casting couch.
He also rubbed up against my knee and said that he needed to stare into my eyes.
When contacted by the LA Times, Toback denied all of the allegations. None of the women alleging harassment contacted police at the time. But now, from Hollywood to Washington, more women are speaking out against sexual harassment, sharing personal experiences with the hashtag MeToo. On Meet the Press this morning, four Democratic senators shared their stories of harassment.
He's chasing me around the desk, trying to get his hands on me.
Pretty much put his finger in my face, and he said, men will always beat their wives, and you can't stop them.
He said, well, did you bring your knee pads?
We need to put a stop to this.
The demands for change getting louder as each woman speaks out. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Hollywood.
President Trump turned up the pressure on Republicans to come up with a tax reform package today, saying he wants an overhaul plan on his desk by Thanksgiving. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell with the latest.
An autumn outing for the president today to his Virginia golf club. Not long after the motorcade was rolling back, President Trump turned to business by dialing into a House Republicans conference call, a Sunday strategy session on tax cuts. On the same page with a pep talk from Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
We're going to score a big legislative accomplishment here on tax reform in the very near future.
Legislative wins have been elusive. The president claimed past defeats are leveraged now in an interview with Fox Business.
I will say the fact that health care is so difficult, I think, makes the taxes easier. The Republicans want to get it done.
Making the rare move of going to Congress, the president heads to Capitol Hill Tuesday to join GOP senators for a private session. Despite his pattern of in-your-face swipes at those very lawmakers, claiming it's a tactic.
But I think actually sometimes it helps. Sometimes it gets people to do what they're supposed to be doing.
Beyond that domestic to-do list, there is another major pressure point coming this week. Lawmakers who are frustrated and stunned because they didn't even know about the mission in Niger that claimed four American lives of Special Forces soldiers. They want a briefing and expect the Pentagon to answer about the intelligence around the mission and who authorized it. So far, the White House has not said if the president was involved in any part of okaying that operation, pending the outcome of an investigation. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House. Kelly, thank you. Parts of Oklahoma are recovering tonight from severe storms. As many as four tornadoes hit southwestern and central Oklahoma late yesterday, causing damage to buildings and cars and bringing down power lines and trees. One of them struck a casino during a Beach Boys concert. No injuries were reported. More than a month after Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rico's economy remains almost at a standstill. The financially strapped island, so dependent on tourism, is now struggling to survive after a fatal blow to its power grid. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the latest now on how businesses, big and small, are trying to cope.
This is where all the tables would have been.
The restaurant Jackie Reyes owns in San Juan is torn apart. And more than a month after Hurricane Maria, time is standing still.
Just think about 1 month without your income. That puts you like 6 months behind in your personal economy.
Across Puerto Rico's capital, the hum of generators is the soundtrack of a crippling reality. 80% of the U.S. territory is still without power. Many businesses relying on cash and paper instead of credit cards and computers. A modern dark age. Jose Caraballo Cueto, a professor at the University of Puerto Rico, estimates the island has already lost nearly $3 billion in economic output since the storm.
Not just of people, but some businesses are also migrating because they cannot operate.
More than $70 billion in debt before Maria, Puerto Rico is now mired in even deeper financial quicksand. Damage estimates from the Category 4 hurricane reach up to $95 billion. Joaquin Pastor's coffee shop also has no electricity, and he's desperate to get his business running again.
I've been closed for 33 days.
Jackie Reyes is now trying to convince her employees not to leave for the U.S. mainland.
It's going to take a little time, but we can get back even better than we were.
She may not have power, but she does have hope. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News.
In Japan tonight, voters have given the party of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe a big win in snap parliamentary elections, giving Abe a mandate to continue his hard line against North Korea. The Prime Minister, who's an ally of President Trump, also wants to change Japan's constitution so that the military can go beyond the solely defensive role it's had since the end of World War II. While North Korea delivers heated anti-U.S. rhetoric almost daily, hearing from the people of North Korea is rare. NBC's Keir Simmons got that chance on a state-sponsored visit to a temple nestled in the mountains 100 miles north of the capital, Pyongyang.
Hidden in the heart of North Korea, a devoutly atheist country, something rarely seen by outsiders, a Buddhist temple, 1,000 years old, perhaps offering lessons for today.
This is beautiful.
The temple was bombed by the US during the Korean War, Kim Sol-kyung tells me.
This is such a peaceful place. Do you worry that it will see another war soon?
Another war won't happen because we are a nuclear superpower, she tells me. The US should wake up from its war dream. The Puhyang Temple attracts many visitors in a country that discourages religion. Inside, prayers to Buddha and another belief often expressed in North Korea, that North Korea's supreme leader will keep them safe.
There's a lot of talk of war right now.
Kim Jong-un will protect us, the monk says. I ask him about the nuclear weapons Kim Jong-un is developing. He says sometimes it's okay to kill if it saves more lives. At all times, our government minders look on. These are tense times in North Korea.
There are so many aspects of this country closed off to the outside world, not least the sheer beauty of the place. Standing here, it's hard to take in that the leadership of North Korea has said a nuclear war could break out at any moment. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Hansang, North Korea.
With China's increasingly prominent place in the world, a spectacle going on right now in Beijing is being scrutinized both inside and outside the country. The Communist Party Congress is a display of power and a chance for China's president to lay out his vision before the Congress gives him another term. NBC's Janice Mackey Frayer has more from Beijing.
An authoritarian pageant in the heart of a rising superpower. The twice-a-decade Communist Party Congress in Beijing's Great Hall of the People playing out over 7 days. And the man at the center, Xi Jinping.
He probably is one of, if not the most powerful international leader today.
In a marathon 3.5-hour speech to the party's elite, he laid out his vision of total control. Achieving national rejuvenation will be no walk in the park, he said, in declaring a new era that includes restoring China's position on the world stage. Across China, Xi is considered popular. The president's face, books, and slogans are everywhere. An app released in conjunction with the party conclave invites users to applaud his speech by tapping their phones. It's gone totally viral, clocking nearly 1.5 billion virtual claps in just 5 days. But dissent isn't tolerated here. Authorities cracking down during the party congress, state surveillance expanded.
These shows of Chinese politics are rare, but there are no surprises here. Every decision is predetermined behind closed doors.
And they will cast a wider net on Chinese society. During Xi's 5 years in power, the party's grip has already tightened on culture, religion, the internet. President Trump will make his first state visit here on November 8th, just after the party congress gives Xi Jinping another 5-year term of unparalleled power. The question is what he will do with it. Janice Mackey Frayer, NBC News, Beijing.
Still ahead tonight, a new assessment of police body cams. Just how effective are they in preventing violence? Also, the remarkable gathering in Texas as 5 former presidents come together for an important cause. Body cameras are being used by more and more police departments in this country following a string of high-profile police shootings of unarmed civilians in recent years. But how effective are the cameras in reducing tension and preventing violence? The results of a new study are in, and Morgan Radford has the details.
Drop the gun.
There was hope that putting video cameras on police officers would reduce moments like this, helping stop abuses that have become a focus of police and protesters since the 2014 fatal shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. A new study out suggests that police body cameras might not be that effective. More than 2,000 police officers in Washington, D.C. were tracked over 18 months, half with body cameras, half without. Researchers found that those with body cameras used force at about the same rates as those without. Civilian complaints against the officers were also no different. a direct contrast to a previous smaller study that found body cameras did change police behavior.
People, they really want to know that your police department is being transparent. It's nice to have a accurate record of our interactions with the community.
The technology is now common, with the federal government giving police departments more than $40 million for the devices. Some 95% of large police departments investing in the technology.
Changing officer behavior isn't the only reason for deploying body cameras. It's also about accountability in the communities that police are designed to protect.
African Americans are more than three times as likely as whites to be treated forcefully by police.
How many people think body cameras should stay, yes or no? None of you think the body camera should stay.
And if you look at this study, it does not change police behavior.
We also have cell phone cameras. We've had dash cameras for years. What we have is a lack of ability of police officers to feel there'll be any consequences.
Whether or not you have a video or not doesn't bring people back. It isn't stopping them from dying. And so I think the entire conversation is a waste of time.
The question now is, will these instruments of justice work?
Don't move!
Citizens and police alike say they'll be waiting and watching.
Let me see your hands!
Morgan Radford, NBC News, Washington, D.C.
We're back in a moment with the kind of teamwork that goes well beyond the football field. It's not often we see all five living former presidents under one roof, but there they were this weekend, gathered in Texas at a concert to benefit victims of this season's devastating hurricanes. Presidents Carter, Clinton, and Obama, and both George W. and George H.W. Bush united in a common cause that has raised more than $30 million. It'll be a rematch of this year's Super Bowl tonight as the Atlanta Falcons take on the New England Patriots here on NBC. This year, the Falcons are playing their home games in a brand new $1.5 billion stadium. And it turns out the importance of the new arena to the community goes well beyond football. Here's NBC's Tammy Leiter.
Atlanta's new Mercedes-Benz Stadium is more than a new home for a professional football team. It's one reason why one of the poorest neighborhoods in the American South has a chance at turning things around.
How would you describe this community?
Crime infested, poverty stricken. Many of the residents lack job skills.
Reverend Howard Beckham helps run West Side Works, a job training program just down the road from the stadium. Falcons owner Arthur Blank invested $15 million in the program as part of a deal to get the stadium approved. Graduates actually helped build the stadium, and now many more work inside. Like many of the nearly 600 graduates, Tangela Taylor spent decades in and out of jail, but has now found full-time work.
Without this program, do you think you would have been able to turn your life around?
No, because as I walked the streets and I was wondering, what could I do to change my life? I never imagined that going to school through Westside Works would put me here.
Team owner Arthur Blank saw the positive impact the program has made, and his foundation more than doubled the initial investment. He says he's not done.
You sound like you're in this for the long haul.
Yeah, you have to be when you're talking about changing, you know, behavior and patterns of living for that have been ingrained over the last 30, 40 years. There's no quick fix. There just is not.
How y'all doing today?
Former drug addict Nicholas Holmes learned construction through Westside Works. He now works full time, raises his daughter, and just purchased his first home.
I'm glad I'm here, man. I could never have fathomed that my life would be where it is today. And
in the shadow of this stadium, a community now filled with hope that runs well beyond the length of a football field. Tammy Leitner, NBC News, Atlanta.
And coverage of tonight's Falcons-Patriots game begins right after this program, right here on NBC. When we come back, when the nurse is also an artist, the surprising effect on kids in the hospital. Finally tonight, let's face it, a stay in the hospital, not exactly the most fun experience, but for children in one pediatrics wing, drawing is making the experience a whole lot more tolerable. Though it's not just the kids who are doing the drawing, Joe Fryer explains.
How are we doing?
Hospitals share little common ground with museums. Yet the pediatric ward at Utah Valley Hospital is home to a constantly revolving collection of art.
So can I draw something on your window?
Works created not by a skilled painter, but by a nurse like Dennis Hatfield.
I'm not there with Michelangelo, I know that.
When he's not drawing blood, he's drawing cartoons, bursts of color splashed upon the glass doors and windows.
It's been a passion of mine since I started working pediatrics.
Sidelined by a serious infection, 5-year-old Reagan Watkins requests Superman.
What is he coloring now?
For her mom, the gesture is more powerful than a locomotive.
They care about my child. So that's probably been the best message we've gotten here.
Hatfield's idea has spread among the staff, contagious in a good way, giving nurses a chance to connect with young patients.
And them seeing that we're not just here to poke them and hurt them, but we're also here to make things fun.
You can draw it anywhere you want.
Before long, the kids are up and moving and maybe for a moment forgetting where they are.
I'm so glad that what's happening now is happening because it's a good thing.
While the images can be erased, Nurse Dennis hopes his idea will live on, creating smiles through art. Now that's a superpower.
Do you know the alphabet?
Joe Fryer, NBC News,
Perfect.
Provo, Utah.
And they're really good artists, too. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.